College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
We might be in for a treat today, because Taylor and I are getting ready to go, and Pollock jumps in and jumps on the podcast in our ear, and he is hyped. And I originally asked him how many cups of coffee did he have. Instead of telling us how many cups of coffee, he tells us how many workouts he had today. It's 1 p.m. on Wednesday. And how many have you had so far?
We got two in, baby. We got two. Let's go.
Two workouts in.
Let's get weird,
and we've got another one scheduled tonight?
Yeah, we got the 8:30 after small group tonight. We got a little 8:30 to 10:30 hoops with all the old heads and all my buddies come over and play some pickup basketball on Mondays and Wednesdays.
Are you a power forward? What position are we playing, Pollock?
I'm a point guard.
No, you're not.
No, I am. I'm a point guard.
Yeah, is that because you can't shoot? You just distribute the ball? Like, what's your game like?
Well, when I play with them, they're not super athletic. My buddies are really fun and really awesome and they love to play. And that's why I did that time, but it's not overly competitive. So if you go to the basket, you're probably going to get hacked. So no, I'm more of a three ball guy and a pass guy when it comes to this, but in leagues and stuff that we play in with the Young Bucks, we always, now I bring a couple of guys that are young, that are ringers that can dunk it any way you want to. So we can guard each other and make life really difficult and really hard. But Nah, dude, man, I just get a bunch of my buddies to fight Father Time, man. It's called the Father Time Fighters on the text message feed. And I put them all together on there and text him in the mornings on Mondays and Wednesdays and say, who's in? And then they slowly start to go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Boom. Everybody moves. Everybody gets better.
I like that, but I would never would have thought that, you are a point guard in basketball. You just don't,
I do a lot of dribbling and a lot of, like, I've worked on my game a lot because I'm a loser and I used to play in league games with all my buddies and they knew how to play. And I've always been athletic, but people would sag off me, and it absolutely ticked me off.
Because they had no respect for you.
Well, they should have sagged off me because I couldn't throw in the ocean
exactly.
From the lifeguard stand.
Yeah, no respect.
So I went to the gym, and I literally shot 500 shots a day for, you know, during basketball season for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it finally got to the point where I could just shoot the mess out of it. And every time they backed off, I was like, yeah, get you some of that. And then, you know, once you can shoot it, you can pump and go to the basket. Now life opens up and it's fun. So took some work, a lot of dribbling, a lot of hours, but we had to get the game. We had to get the game acceptable for making sure we dominate.
All right. So are we like an 18-foot jumper, or do we got like a 3-point jumper? What kind of range do we have?
We're from deep and then three or four steps behind the 3-point line. Oh yeah. We're pulling a lot. Hey, I know my role. Okay. I know my personnel. KYP, right? Know your personnel.
Uh-huh.
When I play with my buddies that played college basketball and that are really good, I do not do a ton of shooting. I'm a role player. Go get offensive rebounds, play D like a madman, rebound and just find your offense. When I play church ball and with my buddies and stuff, I know I got to score, you know, 30, 40. I got to make sure I fill it up. So it's a different, depending on your different games. But here's the bottom line. If you want to know how I've been playing with my buddies that are a little bit older and they keep getting older, and this league we play in Oconee is still young. And, so this year I was like, all right, guys, I'm going to pick up a few that can hang so we can at least compete, because I'm usually the point guard and I have to guard a guard and I'm running up and down the floor and I don't get to rest and my buddies are a little bit older. So I was like, all right, I'm going to pick up a few to make us a little bit different. So enter Turtle Jackson from the University of Georgia, who played guard for 4 years there. Enter Pop, who played in the rotation at Georgia. So we got a 6'4" guard and a 6'6" big. And life is totally different.
And you
now.
Just hang in the corner and just say, give me the ball. Give me the ball. Give me the ball.
No, I give them the ball and I go get it. I just let them shoot and I'll rebound for days. And, dude, it's so cool when you play with guys that know the game like that. And now we sprinkle in my buddies that are older and, you know, some of them are 42 and some of them are almost 40 and, you know, that age that now we can still hang because we got guys that are freak shows. So it makes it a lot of fun.
That's good. It's good.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being 40 or 42, okay? I'm just telling you that.
No, nothing wrong with that.
All right. Nothing. Just making sure. Yeah.
I mean, I probably might not want you on my basketball team, but there's nothing wrong with that.
You don't know nothing about my skill set.
I do not, okay. But I'm judging a book by its cover.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So am I wrong?
No, I'm an outside shooter, man. Put me in the corner. Put me in the corner and you'll be good to go.
Do you play defense, Kevin?
I do, but
if you don't, I tell people all the time, if you don't play defense and hustle, I don't want you on my team.
I do, but I will say my priorities on offense. We'll just put it that way.
Okay.
I've gotten better as a defensive player as I've gotten older, knowing my limitations.
Okay, so here's what we'll do. If you were here with, you know, with Team Ice Club Tub, that's what we call ourselves because we're getting old and we have to ice everything after mm-hmm. you're done and you're
yeah.
getting hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know that you'd crack the rotation. I don't know if you give so enough
you're,
defensive
you're
effort.
You're doing that again. You're judging a book by its cover.
I know. I'm also listening to your scouting report on yourself and I don't like it. I don't like what I hear.
See, you undersell and then overachieve.
Overdeliver.
Yeah, that's
undersell, overdeliver. I like that. Okay.
All right. We do this podcast in separate locations. I'm in Bristol most of the time. Pollock is home or wherever.
Never
game
in
day.
Bristol.
Is
never in Bristol.
But you know, we say never in Bristol, right? But because I never get the chance to see you and our paths crossed on Sunday leading up to the ranking show. It was great to have you in studio and actually doing a segment with you on the air talking about college football. And, we had a good time. We had a good time with me, you and Joey, who didn't want to give us a number one
that?
Seed and Jesse Palmer. That's just Joey's stick. Joey likes to give me the business every time we're on the air.
He needs some syrup with that waffle.
Oh,
just waffling
gosh,
back and
yeah.
forth. Good
and
Lord. Come
I
on,
was
going
to end the segment without getting something out of him. And he said LSU. That was the first thing
Not
he mentioned.
Really. He didn't really say LSU.
You mentioned LSU. Jesse talked about LSU. What do you think of the semifinal matchups when we have LSU as the one seed taking on Oklahoma? And then you got, I think the nightcap that everybody has circled, the Fiesta Bowl featuring Ohio State versus Clemson.
I think the first one's going to be incredibly disappointing. I think it's going to be bad. We've seen a lot, you know, we've seen a lot of lopsided games in college football playoffs. It's just been a part of it. The playoff hadn't really delivered great games, you know, in semifinals. And I think you'll see that with Oklahoma and LSU. I just don't, I don't see Oklahoma's offense scoring 40 plus because they're not that kind of offense like they used to be. And they're definitely not going to stop Joe Burrow consistently. So I think that one's going to be less competitive. But how about a number one draft pick this year, Chase Young versus the number one draft pick, Trevor Lawrence next year? Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. Like that's a good storyline. Two really good teams. They played obviously several years ago and it was 31-0. And now you look at Ohio State and the star power with Fields and Dobbins and Chase Young. And then you look at Clemson with the star power with ETN and Lawrence and Isaiah Simmons. And I mean, just a lot of dudes will be on the field, a lot of athleticism. It'll be a heck of a matchup. I think we're going to get some points and it's going to be awesome. That's going to be the best semifinal, especially for a 3-2 seed that I think that we've seen.
Did you say number one draft pick this year, Chase Young versus
yeah.
number one draft pick next year, Trevor Lawrence? Because you believe that Chase Young is going to be taken before Joe Burrow?
I do.
Really?
I do. I would take a.
No, you would, but do you think that's going to play out that way? Cause the way the league, the NFL values quarterbacks.
No, listen, if the Bengals can say, okay, I want Joe Brady and Joe Burrow and they package that together, that'd be a great move and a smart move for them, for the organization. But, I don't know. Chase Young's freaky. Joe Burrow is too. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah,
Joe Burrow
is
great.
Knock on Joe Burrow. It's more of how you feel about Chase Young.
I just think you look at the Bosas that went to the same school. He's better than them. And Nick Bosa's tearing up the NFL. I mean, he's got great technique mixed with I'm a freak show, Megatron, weird alien athlete. I mean, mm-hmm. so it'll be interesting to see, if it is, but okay, at worst, he's the number two pick. And so it's number two pick versus number one pick. Is that better? Does that make you feel better?
No, I it doesn't make me feel better. It just adds some clarity. I just wanted to make sure. I wanted to go over
context,
it with you.
I hear you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, as an anchor, this is some of the things that when things stand out and.
Hey, your job is to put it on a tee, okay?
That's your job. My job is to make sure we get the most informed commentary. And we double it down and we ask questions.
Okay. That's great. By the way, Reese Davis is salt of the earth. Nothing
yes.
bothers Reese Davis.
Yep.
He is very even keeled. If you say Reese, just put it on a tee, it pisses
of course.
Him off to no end. Like we'll have producers come in for certain shows, you know, that are one-off shows and be like, let's just, you know, just tee this conversation. He's like, I understand what you're trying to say.
Yep.
I'm not here to put things on a tee. It's not a tee. Like mm-hmm. don't tell me to just, I'm like, Reese, that's your job is to put on a tee. We make you look good. Like, what's the deal here? And he literally gives you that look like, I will slap the mess out of you. It's awesome.
Well, good. I'm glad Reese does that. And he should do that if you keep on bringing it up. we're not, our job there is to make sure we have a productive conversation and we push you a little bit, push you a little bit, push you even more and get the best stuff out of you. And I wanted to make sure you expanded with the Chase Young. If I just let that slide, you wouldn't have told me that he's better than both the Bosas and that Joe Brady should be with Joe Burrow as a package deal to Cincinnati.
So good job.
That's
good
why
job
we
by
ask
you.
Those questions.
Put on a tee.
You're such a fun. There's another question I want to ask you that came from that Sunday show, which I found compelling, not so much as the question, but the answers that we got. By the time that you guys were done, and you were getting ready for the noon playoff ranking show, we had Velma on, Jonathan Velma, Dan Orlovsky, Jim Moore on, and we were in a discussion about quarterbacks in this playoff, right? And
about who they would take?
Yes.
Oh, I want to know.
And then now let's just make sure we also have the guidelines here. We're not talking about like Sunday talent. We're not talking about,
you're talking about to win a game in college.
To win a playoff game right now. Who would you take, Burrow, Fields, Lawrence, or Hurts on the 28th?
Is this debatable for you, or are you like super concrete?
For me?
Yes.
I've got an answer. I want to hear yours first.
Okay. To me, this is very, very, very simple. And that's, you're talking about a guy in Jalen Hurts that have obviously played for Bama and been to the playoff every year of his career. And you're talking about Trevor Lawrence, that's the number one overall pick. And you're talking about Justin Fields, who has a 40-something-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. And I'll take Joe Burrow all day long.
Why?
He's got a combination of everything. He throws the ball more accurately than anybody. You add in, it's not just the athleticism. It's the athleticism with spider sense feel. And I would just love to do a tape one day. Like, he knows when two people are, he knows when somebody's blitzing and it's just one person. And he's like, okay, one person, I got this. Like, I can beat this. This is no problem. Two people, oh, okay, I need to step up. Like, he has an innate feel. And then to extend the time, but the accuracy to put the ball right on the daggum money consistently, along with the athleticism and the feel in the pocket and, it's just, to me, he's playing better than anybody that I've ever seen. I mean, it's just on another level.
I love it. I think I would take Trevor Lawrence. And you know what
really?
I found fascinating about the conversation that we had was with Velma, Orlovsky, and Mora, none of them agreed. Velma, I think, was going to go Burrow. Orlovsky went with Lawrence. And then Mora went with Hurts. And he brought his experience in big games and understanding what it's like to play.
So Trevor Lawrence doesn't have experience in the playoffs?
You can have that conversation with Coach Mora.
He just won it last year.
You can have that conversation with Coach Mora. I would go with Trevor Lawrence just because of one thing, and this is not a knock on Joe Burrow. It's just Trevor Lawrence is there last year. He was a dominant player in that national championship, and that same player that we saw in the national championship is even better now, as we've seen the last 6 weeks.
Hold up. That means that you have a smidge of doubt about Joe Burrow.
No, it doesn't. It does not.
Well, your explanation for defining it. I'm going to be a Sports Center anchor here, there, homeboy. Your explanation for defining Trevor Lawrence and saying he was better than Joe Burrow. Oh, because I've seen him do it and he did it last year and I know he's going to do it in a big moment. See, that's just bull. Like, he's either better and you would take him because you think he's better, or he's not. Don't give me that garbage. Why is he better than Joe Burrow? If you don't, that means you don't trust Burrow as much as you trust Lawrence in a big moment.
I would take Trevor Lawrence over Joe Burrow.
Because he's more talented?
What I have seen with my own eyes in the last 6 weeks from Trevor Lawrence is this is the quarterback we were all expecting to see in the beginning of the season. And I love the two wide receivers he's surrounded with.
What about the ones that are...
See, and I was going to say, and you're going to make this like me knocking LSU's wide receivers. No, I know Trevor Lawrence on the big stage, and that's the one thing that I trust. I trust that. Now, granted, Joe Burrow's been in the big stage against Georgia in an SEC championship.
He did okay.
Been a big stage against Alabama, and he's been on the big stage against Auburn and Florida.
great.
I agree Texas. With you. He's a great player. I love Joe Burrow and his talent. I'm going to take Trevor Lawrence to start.
I love Joe Burrow and his talents, but I think Lawrence is better, is what you're saying.
I'm going to take Trevor Lawrence to start this playoff
Joe Burrow.
I'm going to take Trevor Lawrence to start this
hitting Georgia in the face with a shovel repeatedly upside the head.
I cannot wait. If everything falls and we have this discussion in New Orleans, because that's where we will be.
It'll be Fields versus Burrow. Yeah, it'll be a good debate.
You think so? Tell me why you're picking Ohio State over Clemson.
Kevin, we've been doing this podcast thing for a hot minute, boy.
Yeah, we have.
And one team has Chase Young and one team doesn't. I mean, it's as simple as that to me. Like I really liked Xavier Thomas last year coming into the season, and I thought he was very special, and I thought he was really going to take it to the next level. He hasn't. He hasn't really evolved and been that down. And listen, he got a concussion, got dinged up in the middle of the season and missed a game or two or missed some time. The consistent pass rush packaged with the secondary, I mean, between Arnett and Okuda and Wade, like it's filthy in the back end. I have question marks about all teams, and I could go into all that, but I just, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Chase Young can get to quarterbacks, but Chase Young doesn't just get there and get a piece of people. He's still 6'5", 265 with that athleticism. He gets quarterbacks to the ground. He doesn't shake off. He doesn't allow plays to extend, and he's just going to continue to get on him and make things happen. So I favor Ohio State in that matchup.
How do you think Oklahoma?
Don't ask me about LSU Oklahoma because I just told you.
How do you think Oklahoma can try? Like again, their defense has looked a little bit better. Now, granted, it was against Baylor and they got in the backfield early on in that first half.
So it was against Charlie Brewer. Baylor's third string quarterback.
Yeah. Oh, okay. They struggled on those first two passes against the third string quarterback, especially in the secondary. Okay. How can Oklahoma keep this close?
Score.
That's it.
Score a lot. Score and score and score again. I mean, and it's not a knock on anybody else. I mean, Georgia's defense can't stop, LSU, then Oklahoma's not. It's just not going to happen. I don't see it in any way, shape, or form. So I think that, they're going to have to score a bunch of points. Now listen, Jalen Hurts' ability to run the football and, you know, eat up clock and maybe win the time of possession like Oklahoma's done against Baylor the last two times they've played them in big games. I mean, just dominate time of possession. Eviscerate it. And that's your chance maybe, but I don't see it.
Okay. This is a good
discussion. Can you make a case from Oklahoma?
I can make no case for Oklahoma in this one. None whatsoever.
About like if we had an 18 playoff right now and you had four games, you wouldn't make a case for three of them. I mean, it would just be some interesting, horrifically bad matchups.
I get that. You know, like I think Fowler put out something on social media like this is the Vegas lines if we had eight teams and then the matchups, and I think three of them would be favored by at least double digits. I think there were a couple that were in the 20s, and I was like, ooh, wow. But it's a valid point. My point was to play the eight teams before, you know, to replace conference championships. Now, granted, that's not going to work, but it was the weekend that we have scheduled for conference championships. We would have that as a quarterfinal.
Yeah. And that would be way more in favor of that.
Because those matchups were great.
Those matchups were actually solid, but you got a lot of money in the way there with conference championships and conference schedules and a lot of things that would have to change. But so we won't go into that.
Yeah, we're not smart enough to continue to expand on that conversation.
I'm definitely not.
But I have you here because on this podcast, you're hot on some of the coaching moves, and let's talk about a few of them. Of course, Lane Kiffin coming back to the SEC, now at Ole Miss. Mike Norvell at FSU. Sam Pittman emotional this week as now the Arkansas head coach, the former Georgia associate head coach and offensive line coach. Eli Drinkwitz now going to Missouri, former App State coach, who's only 36 years old. What are your first thoughts about some
Chad
of these
Morris
moves?
Going to Auburn?
Chad Morris going to Auburn?
Yeah. Why are you acting surprised?
I know, but I'm talking about head coaches moves.
Yeah. All right. Well,
you think that's going to be? I mean,
some coordinator moves I think that are interesting too.
But, go ahead.
To me, Chad Morris one struck a nerve, or not struck a nerve, or just I think that could be really good for Auburn. Gus Malzahn has had all kinds of offensive coordinators. I don't know that he listens to any of them. And Chad Morris, you got to believe, you know, experience in the league, experience in this type of offense for a number of years. And if Auburn wants to get to the next level, it's got to be the evolution of the passing game and getting better at that spot and being more diverse. And I just think that could make a enormous, enormous impact on Auburn. And cause we know about the Auburn defense. It's been great for years and years and years. And I think it gives Auburn the 1-2 punch of Kevin Steele and Chad Morris. So I think you could argue is one of the best in the league. Mm-hmm. So I just think that will be a big part of college football. Can he have a huge impact? Maybe not like Joe Brady, but can it be close? Can it impact that offense and make it, you know, 7 points, 10 points a game better? Now you're talking about an Auburn team that could have beat everybody on their schedule. So I just think about, you know, national championship implications, you know, stuff like that is the first thing I looked at. But I'd love to hear somebody that I'd love to hear you talk about Lane Kiffin. Like, what do you think? What came to mind when you heard Lane Kiffin to Ole Miss?
Don't screw it up. Like, he brought the flair. He knows how to score points. We know he's a talented play caller in the sense of putting the guys in the right spot. He can recruit. Don't screw it up. Don't go over the top. And this is your chance. You got the chance to come back to the SEC for some redemption.
Yeah.
You are talented as a coach on the field. It's the time away from coaching on the field. Don't screw it up.
I'm a huge fan of second chances in life. Like I believe in them because I've screwed up a lot of things in my life. And I just really hope that Lane has learned from this and Lane has matured. And cause they're, like you said, dude, he's a good recruiter. He's a phenomenal play caller. I mean, just phenomenal. He's got a great feel for the game like many people don't have. The ability to string one play to the next play to the next play. His feel, he's always one step ahead. It's really awesome. And I like what he said on our selection show on Sunday. He talked about, I wouldn't be in this situation if it wasn't for Nick Saban taking me in and teaching me the ropes and teaching me off the field, or that it's not just about X's and O's, that I got to be a leader of men. And that's where I think that he's going to succeed or he's going to fail. It's going to be whether he learned enough about leadership and how to lead and what's important as a head coach. It's not just about dialing up ball plays. It's getting a pulse of everybody in the room and keeping things fun, keeping things loose, but holding having accountability and making sure people are working hard. And it's just, there's more to it than just being the head guy or just being a play caller, excuse me. And I hope he learned from it. But I think it's a chance for Ole Miss, and they're taking a swing, and it'll be interesting to see how it works. That's for sure.
Now, you threw me off because I know you wanted to talk about coaching hires, and you started out immediately with the assistant and, of course, the move of at Auburn. Where do you want to go? Do you want to continue to talk about assistants, or do you want to talk about Mike Norvell at Florida State and your thoughts about head coaching decisions, or are there other moves behind the scenes? Again, you threw me off.
I thought you were supposed to put this on a tee.
Well, no.
I mean, you have one job, Kevin. Seriously. Right. Like, intro, set up, fade away. Intro, set up. I mean, this isn't that hard, Kevin.
Taylor, you ready to host the podcast the rest of the way here? Because the way Pollock's going, man, that two workout day this morning, he's jacked up and he's
feeling himself
up. Bombs left and right here.
Yeah.
So where do you want to go? Do you want to talk about other head coaching moves? No. I mean, I agree. The Chad Morris thing was a great point. Very valid. Let's see if Gus listens to him. I'm curious to see how that plays out too. He's got a really talented quarterback as a son who decommitted from Arkansas. So now we'll see how that plays out the rest of the way. I'm fascinated by that. But are there other assistant jobs that you thought were interesting so far as Texas looks to fill things out? And we'll see if
I think Georgia got a good hire in Matt Luke.
Oh, I agree, for the line, yes.
Yeah, I think it's very important because Sam Pittman goes to Arkansas, by the way, so we can address that both two at the same time. Mm-hmm. But first of all, Sam Pittman, one of the best recruiters in college football, has been for years and years and years. Look at Georgia's offensive line. He's a big reason for that. He got great energy, knows how to relate to the kids. Dude, this dude, he's not a guy that, you know, he's a guy that you knew with Sam Pittman, just some context, like, he's a guy that wants to go retire in Arkansas, and he had a plot of land already that he already laid out that he was going to build his house on and retire. So, like, it was in the near future, in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, 5 to 8 years. And to be able to go home to where he's from and where he's had success and coached and take that, you know, take that pride of Arkansas back with him. What is he known for? He's known for big physical offensive linemen. When was Arkansas good, by the way? When they had those big boys up front that could maul you and get your hands on you and run the football and be physical, and Felix Jones and Darren McFadden and Matt Jones and Peyton Hillis, by the way, who was on the Madden cover. Holy cow. Think about that real quick. So you got all these things, you know, working together for Sam Pittman. I think it was a good hire. I think we'll see how it goes. It's not a home run by any stretch, but it could be a guy that brings back some serious pride to Arkansas. And that's a tough job, man. I mean, it's just, that's a tough job. It's not an easy place to win. Not an easy place to win. So we'll see how that does. But Matt Luke coming from Ole Miss as the head coach. Kevin, news flash for everybody out there if you don't know this. Major universities don't hire great football coaches anymore. Okay? They hire great recruiters.
Mm-hmm.
If you aren't a great recruiter, you don't play it. You don't coach at a big time university. That's just the way it is. You know why? Because if I recruit great talent, Kevin, at Georgia, I can win 10 games a year. I can win 10 games a year on talent at those spots, at big time places like Georgia. So having a guy right away in Matt Luke, passion, energy. By the way, have we just seen his face all over TV as the head coach of Ole Miss?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes. Experienced in the league, by the way. He just coached, obviously, against all these players they're going to be coaching. Gets recruited a lot of these guys that are in the league already. So it makes a lot of sense for Matt Luke. And by the way, if you're ever around Matt Luke, just energy, enthusiasm, big smile, charismatic. So, you know, you talk about guys having to be, recruiters. I think it fits in perfectly with a guy, along with a guy that played in this league and coached in this league. It makes a ton of sense for Georgia.
All right. Recruiting. And when you look at Florida State and you look at Mike Norvell and that relationship, and Florida State's one of those programs, they still have an impact throughout Florida. You walk in, you got that Florida State hat on, you're wearing Florida State gear, people turn their heads and they notice. What do you think of this relationship, this coaching mind, and how it's going to play out for Knowles Nation?
Well, let's point to what Mike Norvell's strength is, offensive play calling. And it's not coordinators, okay? It's him. Coordinators come and go, and he continues to fire up awesome offenses that put up big-time points. By the way, Florida State struggled with offensive line play. They've struggled with quarterback play the last couple of years. His system does a great job of being able to score points and really take advantage of passing and throwing and running and keeping people off balance and not having to have the greatest line, by the way, and still be successful. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Willie Taggart, obviously, I think he was, what, 18-19, something like that. His record was bad. He struggled. The brand has lost some luster, so they need somebody to bring some swag back to Florida State. By the way, have you seen the Mike Norvell picture with the dreads, by the way?
Oh my God.
Is that not amazing? I mean, that's the first picture I'd put up in team meetings. Legit, I would walk and be like, I had cornrows too, bro. Listen to me and listen. When you get older, you can look better like this. I mean, I think the offensive identity. Now listen, his staff will be very important, like filling out a staff, and I think it'll be pivotal to his success, but I think you get the right kind of offensive mind, by the way, that's had success and actually won a conference championship this year. And, you know, Willie Taggart never won a conference championship at any level of coaching ever. Did you know that? Ever. So it was interesting to have a guy come in that never really won big anywhere and had won games, but just never any significant game. So it'll be that Florida State has to get back for the ACC, by the way. Mm-hmm. And they got to get back. If Clemson wants to, you know, they don't want to not have a gripe. Florida State's got to be good. Miami's got to be good. Like we got to get some of that so we can get that rivalry with Florida State and Clemson going again. So we can see some really good games and some competitiveness in this league. Cause right now it's just Clemson and then everybody else, y'all just kind of come and watch. Y'all watch the party.
Norvell can do a lot of things when it comes to bringing in players at the quarterback position. I mentioned this with Herbie, at the skill position and also the defensive line, but he's got to do one thing that we haven't seen in Florida State the last 5 years, and it trailed off in Jimbo in the last couple of years. Offensive linemen. You have to recruit offensive linemen, legit ones. That's what Florida State desperately needs. We're talking about a program through the years that has produced Sunday talent from that offensive line, and they've got to do it again.
By the way, you know what else they have to do? They got to upgrade their facilities. They got to make it more of a priority over there to make sure, because they've lagged way behind in a lot of those areas, and they need to do a better job of committing to that. That's going to be extremely important for Florida State and their success. But hey, any chance White comes with him? Brady White, by the way, junior quarterback. I know he's already transferred from Arizona State, so I know he's set out. I bet you he's already graduated. Just putting that out there. Grad transfer, bring him to Florida State, familiar with the coach, big time football.
That would be
in your back pocket, bro.
For year one of stability, right? That would be a big deal.
Well, year one of belief level. Mm-hmm. You know, like remember, the first thing a coach has to do is get his team to buy in. Like, it doesn't matter if you're the greatest coach ever. The first thing you got to do is walk in that locker room and have everybody believe in you. And, oh, you're an offensive genius. How are you going to do it? What are you going to do? You bring in a quarterback that you already know, that knows your system, that knows your checks, that knows what you want to do, that's had a lot of success. Man, that would get you ahead of the eight ball really quickly.
All right. I'm sure we're just getting started here with the coaching.
Yeah, we are.
Changes.
Yeah.
We'll see how this plays out. We'll see how this plays out down the road. You mentioned Joe Brady real quick. Are you surprised that we haven't heard anything or other teams? I mean, I know that he's basically expressed the commitment that maybe he's going to stay at LSU. Like, are you?
Not for cheap, bro.
Yeah, not for cheap at all.
He might stay, but boy's going to command some cheddar. I can promise you that.
I mean, I would think Texas is knocking on the door and trying to say, come on, let's try and figure this out, right?
By the way, Texas needs to figure themselves out.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, they need to figure out, like, because when I watch them offensively, what I see from Texas is a conflict of Tom Herman being a guy that is a zone read guy, and that's who he is and what he is, and it's what you saw him have a lot of success with, but then he wants to open it up and you want to throw it and you want to make plays with your wide receivers. But anytime it ever gets tight, ooh, we're going zone read. We're going back to what we are, QB run game. That's just, you know, they need to find that identity offensively. And then obviously defensively, it's been, ooh, it was a nightmare this year. It was really, really, really bad. And he's already made the change. And so that will be interesting to see what they do.
All right. You're Texas. Okay. Let's see if you're back. It felt like they were back a year ago. And
first of all, they're not back.
We've
already established that.
Yes.
So
yeah,
but they're better. They are better.
They're better.
Don't give me they're better. They're better than they were with Charlie Strong.
Understood, but, you know, I think they felt like they were going to make a big leap this year, right?
And they did. They leap backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, big leap forward. Sugar Bowl to backwards.
To, one of those, who's playing in the backfield today? Do we have anybody in our secondary? Is anybody healthy?
It'd be nice to get a running back at Texas. You think about Cedric Benson and, oh my God, Ricky Williams. And, oh my, I mean, just, you think about back when they could actually run the football.
Jamal Charles
was nasty. Yep. I mean, I just gotta find a backpack there they can stick with and get the run game going and be more of a threat than Sam Ellinger.
All right. Well, we'll let you go now. You can get ready for your third workout of the day and make
sure
that
was
stretch.
It, bro. That was fast.
Yeah, it was fast. Well, it's fast. I
mean, you did a good job putting it on tee, bud.
40
good job.
Minutes. You're such a jerk.
You did a good job, man. I'm complimenting you. Take the compliment,
15
bro.
15 weeks together. It's just such a jerk, man.
How many more do we have? Are we almost done?
I mean, we've got plenty more. You want the podcast? You got your names on the podcast. You're not leaving me. Man, you're going to be around. You can't escape us for the next few weeks.
Okay, so we're on next week, and then the next week.
Yeah,
First of all, as of January, when's the championship game?
January 13th.
Bro, I'm on hibernation after that.
I'm finding you.
No, you will not. I will be in the gym working out. That's exactly where I will be. I'll be stroking jumpers, baby.
You were at the gym already twice today, and you're still on the podcast, so don't use that as an excuse. By the way, you got some feedback, too, when you were in Atlanta about the podcast?
Dude, I did a signing for Aflac and took some pictures of some folks, and I had five or six people come through and say, dude, I love listening to the podcast. I love hearing you take shots at Kevin. I like y'all's back and forth. And so we got a couple of,
good deal.
Couple of good shout outs, bro.
All in good fun. And we enjoyed each and every week and, your family. And, I think our listeners are part of that family. They're just listening. They're eavesdropping into our conversation. And,
no doubt, brother.
Let's continue to do it. Enjoy it. And, next time we talk, hopefully you'll have just one workout in. You're not all jacked up here on me and Taylor.
No doubt. See, dudes.
This is it. Heather Dinich checking in on the final college football playoff ranking. She was in Grapevine, Texas, talking to the committee over the weekend. We'll get her take on the semifinals right after a word from AT&T and Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chests with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Always great to have college football insider Heather Dinich on the College Football Podcast. Heather, so you got a chance to breathe out a little bit. No more follow-ups from Tuesday night. It's been a couple of days since we saw the committee release their rankings. Take us behind the scenes here, because you were there in Grapevine. What was your biggest takeaway from the final playoff rankings?
I think just how important those conference championship games are to the selection committee. I mean, it literally is the only time of the year that they are watching the games together in the same room. And it reiterates the importance of the human element in this. You know, the Big Ten conference championship game is the last game of the night. They're all watching Ohio State, Wisconsin. They're in their lounge chairs. They're in different rooms. They've got all these TVs, and they're seeing Ohio State fall behind 21-7, right, to Wisconsin in the first half. Now, granted, the second half was an entirely different ballgame for Ohio State. They came back and they looked really good. But the minute that game ends, the committee members get up and they go into the next room and they start talking about 1, 2, 3 and clicking and voting. 1, 2, 3. And earlier in that day, they saw how LSU just completely crushed Georgia in all phases, right? And when asked about the difference between 1 and 2 after it came out, committee chair Rob Mullins specifically mentioned Joe Burrow. He mentioned LSU's defense. All of those things came into play, but also he reminded people, look, this debate wasn't just about this one weekend. There are 6 rankings. 3 Ohio State was number 1 and 3 LSU was number 1. That's how close they've been all year. That's how close they were on Saturday night when they were debating it. That's why those championship games matter so much, because it's the punctuation mark on a season-long resume, and it can certainly and did influence the way they think about it when they get up and start to vote.
As we take a look at, and I'm going to be thankful for the 4-team playoff, because again, and I'll say this repeatedly, if we had the BCS, it would be a nightmare situation with Clemson sitting there on the outside. A defending champ going undefeated and they can't get in. And we're going to see LSU versus Ohio State. So I'm glad that we have 4 teams. Has the committee thought about expanding it past 4 teams?
Well, let me be clear that the committee doesn't have the power, mm-hmm. right? And they won't say anything. So we're talking about the commissioners here. The commissioners are Bill Hancock, likes to call them his bosses. And after the announcement came out on Sunday, I asked him about the potential for expansion. And he said that the commissioners are still happy with where things are. But as usual, at the national championship, they're all there and they get together and they will talk about ways to make it better. I would be really surprised if anything changes. They haven't even changed the protocol or the way these four teams are chosen, let alone serious consideration for expansion. And like you mentioned, there are three Power Five undefeated conference champions this year in this thing. Beyond that, how deep does the field really go this year with true elite teams that contend with those three teams to have a shot at this thing? I don't know about you, but I think this year the gap between one and four might be more significant than it has been ever in the college football playoff era.
That's a fair point, especially when you look at Oklahoma's defense and the questions surrounding them and whether they can match the firepower against LSU. The drop off is steep. I just look at how we view and granted, you know, the SEC championship means a heck of a lot to a lot of people. It's rich in history. I just bring up conference championship weekend and the concept of whether it's unique or not. LSU could have afforded to lose and still make it. Clemson maybe could have lost and still made it. And Ohio State could have lost and still made it. And then that brings a discussion like, wait, well, what's the whole point of conference championships if that's going to play a role, right? And I think, I think it was unique to this year, but still, it's still potentially out there. We could have seen that and experienced that. And I think you would have seen a little bit of outrage to say, wait, well, why are we playing? And if you're going week to week and stuff and you're judging teams, what's the whole point of this entire season if you could afford to lose here in a conference championship and still find a way to make the playoff?
Right. Yeah, I agree 100%. The way that everything played out, I think, not only was it easy for the committee, but it was also pretty straightforward in terms of, okay, there wasn't really a lot of controversy, right? You didn't have the minute Alabama lost to Auburn in the Iron Bowl this year, that's when all that discussion about, quote, unequivocally one of the four best teams went out the window. And until it's when you have things like that bumping out another Power Five conference champion that really seems to sizzle those discussions about expanding this thing. When you've got two Power Five champions left out, that's when Notre Dame is in, right? Mm-hmm. That's when one of those Alabama or Ohio State that didn't even win its division is in. And this year wasn't like that. You know, I mentioned earlier, they go in and they vote 1, 2, 3. Then the next pot of teams is 4, 5, 6. So this year they were looking at Oklahoma up against two-loss Georgia. But it wasn't like Georgia last year. It was two-loss Georgia that didn't win its conference championship. But those in the room only put them up on the screen to do their due diligence and make sure that Oklahoma was the one that was supposed to be in that fourth spot. And at the end of the day, Bill Hancock said it was very clear cut that it was the Sooners.
You mentioned a great point with the commissioners. They hold the power here behind Bill Hancock. How do the coaches feel? I know you got a little bit of the temperature. You measure the temperature here of how coaches feel about expansion. What's your takeaway now?
Yes, I spent the majority of last offseason getting 62 of the 65 coaches on the phone and asking them, and 30 of them said that they would be in favor of expansion, which I thought was kind of interesting because it's roughly half, but you would think with all of the buzz that we've had, it would have been more, and it's not. And it was genuinely reflective of where the Power Five conferences had been positioned in the playoff heading into this season. So naturally, the Big Ten, which saw its conference champion out for three straight years until Ohio State broke that this year, they were the conference most in favor of expansion, along with the Big 12. And then, of course, the SEC, naturally, which has been in it every single year, they were the ones who were most opposed to expanding. The coaches saying, look, we got it good. We like it like this. We'll keep it status quo. Thanks. But then of the coaches who were in favor of it, there were 7 of them that format, and there were 10 that were more in favor of the 6-team format. And then I had outliers. I had Mike Leach, who we've all heard before, say we want 65 teams in, and his quotes were priceless. And then Jim Harbaugh really surprised me because he wants an 11-team format. And I get these coaches on the phone. Harbaugh's really hard to get on the phone. I thought I was going to have like 7 minutes with the guy, ask him these questions, right? He floored me with how thoughtful he was. He's like, I got this. I got it on my phone. I have it printed out. Do you want me to text it to you? This is what I would do. This is what it would look like last year. We don't need conference championship games. I mean, he had his plan. So I had called it the Harbaugh plan every time I talked to my editors about it. But it was really interesting because a lot of them really, really do put some thought into it.
Tell me more about the Harbaugh plan. What did he want?
He wanted 11 teams and he wanted all of the, he actually reverted back to the calling it the BCS system. What he said was he would do five Power Five conference champions, not determined through a championship game, but through just final standings. And then the BCS rankings would determine the other slots up to 11 teams. I think he said that there would be a bye for a sixth spot, and then you would go to the BCS rankings for the next highest ranked teams and then match it up like that.
That's fascinating. I kind of like that. I'm intrigued by that.
It is.
and it is.
Yeah.
For him to put that much thought into it, it shows he's invested. And, I'm going to look up, that story that you have with the Harbaugh plan. I want to find more information about that. That's actually a great alternative and something I haven't heard before. You did something on Twitter, recently, and I kind of want to put you in this spot here on this forum. You mentioned when they make me the college football commissioner, I'm going to have the national championship at the Rose Bowl every single time. And I'm Amen. Leading your way, Heather, because if you've watched a big time game at the Rose Bowl, there's nothing better. I personally think they should have it in New Orleans in a rotation, the Rose Bowl, as well as potentially Miami. Those are the three spots for me,
yeah,
just because of, environment and atmosphere. When I say atmosphere, I'm saying because you know it's going to be a nice day if it's in Miami. It may bring rain, but at least you know that it's going to be a nice day, a nice week leading into it,
right,
and the coverage
right.
of it. What other things would you do? If it could be a short list, if you're the college football commissioner and we're putting you in charge here on the podcast.
The two things I would do right off the bat, off the top of my head, is I would scrap divisions. I think it's absolutely ridiculous that some teams don't play other teams for like decades or whatever we're up to now. And in order to really determine a true champion, like the Harbaugh plan, I think you need to go more towards a Big 12 format, which would narrow some of these conferences. People talk about super conferences. I talk about mini conferences. Let's get the best of the best and you can make more, smaller Power Five conferences and then make the Group of Five larger, whatever you want to do, but have it more like a Big 12 format, determine your champion, and no more FCS schools because it's ridiculous. It's unfair to them. I realize that it's a big payout, but it's like an NFL team playing a high school team. You never see that. You just won't see that. And nobody wants to watch those games. So line up the big boys every year, play every single team in your conference, determine a true champion, and then let the selection committee pick those teams because it would be easier, obviously, for them to compare conferences when everybody is doing the same freaking thing.
I love it. I that's the first thing you want to do. I'm with you. Let's get rid of all the divisions across the board. It's ridiculous to think that certain schools don't play each other, even though they're in the same conference and they go years on years of not. I think the case was, I think Virginia Clemson leading in the ACC championship game. I think it was their first time they were facing off in like, I want to say it was like 6 or 7 years. And I was like, wow, that shouldn't be happening.
Right.
You know, like it shouldn't
right.
be
and
happening.
Like, you knew, yeah. And then you've got like, you know, Georgia plays Auburn. Okay. Well, does Ohio State play Wisconsin or not? You
yes.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, does one team play in their toughest opponent from the other division or don't they? Because that's really hard to compare. I mean, the whole 8-9 team thing. Oh, and by the way, Notre Dame, they can join a league. That would be the third team. Yeah. That would be the third thing.
I'm with
list.
You on that too as well. Yeah. I don't know if that'll even go through if you're the commissioner, but
I'm
with you on that. There's another thing that you also have to kind of deal with on Twitter, and it's this perception. And I deal with it, and I think anybody with college football deals with it here at ESPN, that we have some type of control over what the committee is doing. How frustrating is that for you, especially when you're there and, you know, you're aware of what the committee is doing behind the scenes in the sense of the process, but you have no say. Mm-hmm. We have no say as a company, yet you constantly have to deal with that on social media where you're like, hey, listen, we have nothing to do with it. What's that like for you on a Sunday when you're doing the shows on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday morning when you're on SportsCenter and people are coming at you and they're telling you that we have a role in this decision on who makes the playoff?
Well, two things. One, I've been doing this for so long that people don't bother me anymore. Like, I want to put a thing on my Twitter account. I might change it this offseason that says, I've jumped out of a plane. I've run a marathon. People on Twitter don't bother me. Right? Like, it doesn't matter. So we'll start there. But I will say that when I try to explain things and post them, it is frustrating because I am not putting my opinion out there. I am putting out there what I know the committee is thinking of behind that closed door. I think what happens is people sometimes forget that I talk to people because I don't always say it because they're off the record conversations many times, right? But what I do is I report. That's why I'm there. I do it in the off season. I talk to committee members to understand the system so that when there is a situation, like if Wisconsin had defeated Ohio State, I know for a fact that they're going to consider Wisconsin as a two-loss Big Ten champ and Ohio State. Not that they're going to get in, but I'm trying to tell everybody, look, this is a possibility. If this happens, as we're sitting here in the first half watching the game, this can happen. And I'm telling people that Oklahoma got in part by default, because Utah had to lose, Georgia had to lose, Alabama had to lose. That's not my opinion on Oklahoma. I don't care. I'm telling you what the committee's looking at. Mm-hmm. And I think that line gets blurred so often. That's the frustrating part for me, is that I'm trying to present educated guesses and knowledge based on what I know from how it works to better inform people. Hey, hold on a minute. Oklahoma, you better be nervous here because Wisconsin's winning.
Yeah.
There's a reason. I'm not just throwing it out there.
You're keeping it real for the audience.
I go to sleep.
I mean, that's what you're doing.
I try.
Yeah. And we most appreciate it. And thanks for joining us here each and every Wednesday. Once, you know, the committee got together on Tuesday nights, you were always great in making sure the schedule worked out here on the podcast. Where are you going next? Do you get a little bit of a lull and then you get back into the semifinals? Are you going to a destination?
I am going to New Orleans and I am pulling for the Saints because I tell you what, if we get LSU and a Saints in the playoffs in the span of 24-48 hours.
Oh,
that's where I want to be.
Yes. Yeah. There will be a party on every block, let me tell you.
Yes.
Looking forward to it, Heather. And once again, thanks for joining us here for the majority of the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock.
Thank you guys so much for having me on.
Next up, we've got Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl CEO Gary Stokan, who's going to talk a little bit about LSU Oklahoma. And what exactly goes into being a bowl CEO on a day-to-day basis? Trust me, this is a fascinating conversation because he expands a little bit about what they do, what's that role, and then also we talk a little bit about playoff expansion. But first, let's hear from today's sponsor, Goodyear. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Now back to the show. On December 28th, the first of the two college football playoff semifinals will take place in Atlanta in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl as number one LSU will face number four Oklahoma on ESPN. Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl CEO Gary Stokot joining us now. First off, what are your first thoughts about being able to host the number one team in the college football playoff, LSU, as they face off against number four Oklahoma?
Well, our first thought was seeing LSU and Oklahoma, both of them averaging together 91 points and being number one and number two in total offense. I called Mercedes-Benz Stadium to see if we can open the roof for the fireworks that we're going to have on December 28th.
Well, it's going to be a lot of offense, and I'm looking forward to it, the matchup with Burrow versus Hurts on both sides. You also have a unique perspective, and you're familiar with the selection process. You know what goes into it. Can you give our listeners a peek behind the curtain to know what goes on inside that room? I mean, we've all been a part of the mock selection process, but you being part of the bowl system and understanding, hey, each person looks at things completely different than maybe, you know, a former player, maybe a host here at ESPN. How do you guys look at it, and what kind of pressure is inside that room as you guys try to figure out who deserves to be one, two, three, four, so on and so forth?
Yeah, as you said, I've been in Gaylord in one of the mock drafts with Bill Hancock. And, you know, first off, Bill and the committee do such a wonderful job of, as I think they got it right every year so far. And there's a lot of integrity, a lot of discussion, a lot of great conversations about college football. And I think what people don't realize is everyone on that committee has a team or a conference that they have to study and they have to update every week. And with all the analytics that are provided, it's tough to get it wrong. But I think just for some of the fans, you know, you bring your top 25 to that room and everybody inputs their top three and then the computer spits it out and then everybody gets a chance to debate that, whether you think that's the right three or not. And then you go on to the next three, et cetera, and you get to top 25. And then at the end, once everybody looks at it, if you believe that they need to move somebody, you have to make that debate and you have to get someone else on that committee to agree with you before they'll open the revoting of the top 25 again. So it's really a lot of conversation for us in the bowl business, believe it or not, we have no say so. And this year was kind of unique. I don't know a lot of people know this, but the selection committee picked number one, two, three, and four. And then they reached out to the Rose Bowl committee, who has a contract with the Big Ten and the Pac-12, to ask who they would select. And then they went to the SEC and the Big 12 through the Sugar Bowl, who have that contract. And then they went to the Orange Bowl. And then it came back to the committee to schedule the Cotton Bowl. So that's kind of unique that there are three bowls that have contracts with respective conferences, that they get the opportunity to select their teams, not the selection committee. And for us, you know, we're like you, Kevin. I remember the first year in 2015, I called Bill Hancock and I said, Bill, you going to call me and tell me who we have? And he started laughing. He said, Gary, you will find out when the rest of America finds out. And so we were like everybody else on Sunday. We didn't know who we were going to have and whether we'd have a 4 o'clock or 8 o'clock game. And it came up, LSU versus Oklahoma, and it was in Atlanta, and so we all celebrated. We couldn't go wrong with either game, but we're happy to have LSU and Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I know there is one misconception out there that I think people often believe that the one seed decides where they want to go. No, the committee decides where the one seed is going to go, and they're going to decide in a way that they're going to give them, of course, the advantage. They're not going to put them in an environment where it could favor the four seed. That's the reward of being the one seed in what you've done all season long. So that plays a huge role in how it, you know, they break up that 1-4 and who's going to play 2-3 and where they're going to go.
Kevin, that's a great point you bring up. A lot of people are asking me, well, do they ask, number one, where they want to go? No, the committee basically, by protocol, says we will place the number one team and their fans in a place that's geographically advantaged to them without disadvantaging them. So in other words, if Georgia would have beaten LSU and Ohio State would have been number one and they would have played number four Georgia, they would not have placed Ohio State, even though geographically it's closer to Atlanta than Phoenix, they would not have placed them in Atlanta because they would have looked at disadvantaging Ohio State with Georgia being on the other side. And so they would have placed that game in Phoenix in the Fiesta Bowl.
Gary, you play an interesting role here, and I'm sure our listeners want to know, but selfishly, I want to know. You're a bowl CEO. It's not exactly an everyday position. What led you to this path to become a bowl CEO? Because, like, to me, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'd like to be a bowl CEO. How'd you get here in this position?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I do work more than one day a year. A lot of people think I just work the day of the bowl game. We're probably this year, we'll probably be about a $40 million company. We run the kickoff game. We had Alabama Duke this year. Next year, believe it or not, we'll have three kickoff games in a week, which has never been done in college football history. We'll have West Virginia, Florida State on Saturday, Georgia, Virginia on Monday, and then the next Saturday, Auburn and North Carolina. And along with our bowl game and the SEC championship, five of the top seven conventions that will be in Atlanta next year, which Atlanta being the fourth largest convention town in the United States, will be college football games. That's how important college football is to the city of Atlanta economic impact wise. So, and then we also do the biggest golf tournament with college coaches that we gave $830,000 to charity through our golf tournament last year. We pride ourselves on humbly being the number one bowl game in charitable contributions. We donated $53.8 million back to charity since 2002. And most recently, we just donated $20 million to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta to find clinical trials and cures for childhood cancer. So, you know, we're a 501c3, and so whatever money we raise, we want to give back to the communities and partners that we have.
The venue is gorgeous, and I think that for Oklahoma fans and LSU fans, LSU, of course, being there and their fans, part of the experience for the SEC championship. They've been there. They understand what it's like. For Oklahoma fans, give us an idea of what they can expect coming to the stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It is fantastic. I've been there for the national championship, and the environment is great. What's it like, though, for a Sooner fan if they're going to make the trip?
Well, the great thing for Sooner fans, all they need to do is ask Jalen Hurts, who has been in that facility, played three times. Once with Alabama in our kickoff game, once in the SEC championship and led Alabama to the championship, and then played in the national championship game. So give Arthur Blank all the credit in the world. It's a $1.6 billion facility that he built to make the fan experience an elevated experience. So whether it's the Halo board, which doesn't detract from your viewing but adds to your experience, whether it's the concession prices where you can get a Coke for $2 or $3 and get free refills. You can get hamburger, hot dog, french fries for about $5. He has put a 100-yard bar on the third floor of the facility. You don't see those kind of amenities for the upper price tickets. But Arthur really wanted the fan experience to be unique. And I think he's accomplished that. And I think we have the finest facility in the world right now for any event.
And I love the circular scoreboard up top when you look around. It's definitely unique. You don't see that, especially here in the United States, when you look up and you're like, hey, you know, we're used to just seeing something flat in many of these domes and stadiums for our experience. You look up and you see around, and the sight lines are fantastic in that place. Gary, There's another topic here. When we discuss the idea of a playoff, I'm grateful we're at four, because if we had the old BCS, the idea of discussing three teams and trying to fit them into one game would not be possible, and Clemson would be on the outside. So grateful to have four, but there is a discussion about expansion. And I think the minute, you know, it was announced that we would have four teams, the conversation was like, well, what about six teams? What about eight teams? What about 16 teams? I pitched this idea that during conference championship weekend, we could have the semifinals and the championship stays the same, but we could have a quarterfinal over that weekend. And you could have the matchup of 1 versus 8 and 2 versus 7, so on and so forth. And it gives you a feel like, okay, now granted, we have some playoffs, but we have legit a playoff environment on the conference championship weekend. Well, how do you view expansion right now and down the road in the future?
Yeah, it's a great point. I can debate both sides of it, but I'll give you the side where I really believe that we have a playoff going on right now. The Michigan-Ohio State game was a playoff, the playoff game, the Auburn-Alabama game, the Minnesota-Wisconsin game. All those games were playoff games leading into the conference championships. And then the conference championships, you know, became playoff games. So I think we have a playoff right now. I think the regular season is really healthy. If you look at the viewership of college football and fan avidity wise, it's second only to the NFL. And I just worry on a lot of scale if we did expand. Number one, you're talking about players now that are 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, maybe. They're not redshirting like they used to do, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And so they're young. They're beat up at the end of the year already. And then you're going to play an LSU-Georgia game, let's say in the SEC championship. And if you win that, then you're going to go on and play Oklahoma in a quarter. You're going to go play, let's say Ohio State in a semi. And then you're going to go play Clemson in a final. Well, with only 85 scholarships, I'm not sure you're going to have a whole lot of players ready for that, what is an NFL season. I mean, you just need to go back to Ohio State a few years ago. They had to win with a third-string quarterback. And with the way transfer portal's working now, I'm not sure teams are going to have a second-string quarterback, because if that player comes in and doesn't start, they're going to transfer. After all, three of the four teams are in the playoff this year are transfer quarterbacks. So I think the health of the players we've got to take into consideration. Secondly, I played basketball at NC State in the 70s. And back when I played, there were only 24 teams in the NCAA tournament. The year before I got there, NC State beat Maryland in maybe the greatest game ever, 103-100 in an overtime game. And Maryland was ranked sixth and couldn't go to the NCAA tournament. So they expanded to 32 the next year. Now they're all the way up to 69 teams, and the 70th team is complaining. But it's hurt the regular season attendance. It's hurt the regular season viewership of college basketball. And so I worry about that with expansion of college football. So, I think if you look at the schedule, the calendar, the presidents don't want to go into the second semester. And if you look at the championship games of the conferences, which the conferences are not going to get rid of because it's such a moneymaker for them, and you start to look at the next week being finals and exams and graduation, you have to play a quarterfinal game. If you went to Clemson and said, okay, we're going to put a quarterfinal game at Clemson, where are people going to stay? You've got graduation going on. You've got exams going on. Then you look at the fan perspective. You go to a SEC championship game, let's say, then you go to a quarterfinal, then you go to a semifinal the next week, then you have to pay for Christmas, then you've got to pay for a championship trip. I just don't think fans can afford that. And so I really want us to watch what we're doing here. I know there'll probably be more money in it, but at the end of the day, that's not always the best answer. And so I've got some concerns, and there's probably some other unintended consequences if we move to expanding to eight.
And I know if you're listening now, your argument is, well, they're playing on January 13th. This year was an anomaly. They're not going to be playing this late in the season for the national championship moving forward as they look at the schedule. Because again, there's a gap here when you go December 28th to January 13th. It's a scheduling snafu that they're going to obviously, get back on track down the road. To me, it's a unique thing. I sometimes just wish the experience for, and I agree with you that the conference championships are a playoff as well. But, you know, when we have the argument in this year where we have, hey, Ohio State could afford to lose in the Big Ten championship and still get in. LSU could afford to lose the SEC championship. They could get in. Clemson, that debate, if they lost the ACC championship, they'd get in. That maybe is unique to this year. I just don't want it to be that's the case every single year, right? That the conference championships lose the value, right?
No, you're exactly right. That's a great point. And I think, Kevin, what you'd have to do if you did expand the playoff to 8, you would have to get rid of divisions in the conference.
Yes.
And you would have to play your championship game between number 1 and number 2, like the Big 12 does currently, to make that kind of lead into a quarterfinal matchup, because certainly you don't want a team that maybe gets hot and they're 7-5, 8-4, they represent one side of the division, and you've got two teams on the other side of a division that's, you know, 12-0 and 11-1. And the 11-1 team doesn't get a chance to represent their team, and they're in the top 5 or 10 in the country. So I think you'd have to go through some machinations there of changing things. Now, I would say that looking at the way ADs are scheduling bigger home and home matchups into the future after 26, you know, they could be hedging their bet and thinking there is going to be a playoff expansion. And so you could lose one game in your conference and then maybe lose a tough non-conference game. And with 8 slots filled by 5 conference champions and 1 group of 5, there would still be 2 at-large spots available.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be why they're doing the scheduling the way they're scheduling now.
I'm with you. I like that concept, especially getting rid of the divisions. And the reality is everybody loves Cinderella in March. No one, if you look at the majority, no one wants to see Cinderella in April. And right. And they don't want to see a Cinderella team in the Final Four. They want to see the Blue Bloods. They want to see in the second, third, fourth weeks of March. Hey, let's see the Cinderella try and see if they could knock down somebody in the tournament on the men's basketball side. But I'm not sure anybody wants to see a Cinderella run here in late December when, you know, a conference champion that won their division has 4 or 5 losses and then they bounce out another team to get in. And that could be a completely different story. So get rid of the divisions. I'm all for that. Gary, we're really looking forward to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl here featuring LSU versus Oklahoma on ESPN December 28th. We appreciate you joining us.
Kevin, thanks so much for having us, and come visit us in Atlanta. We look forward to hosting you.
Looking forward to it. Want to thank Pollock, Heather, as well as Gary Stokan, the CEO of the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, for joining us here in the podcast. Also want to thank our sponsors, AT&T, Allstate, and Goodyear. Big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk, holding it down for all of us. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, remember, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. We much appreciate it.